I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, allaussieradio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, first of all, I start off telling everybody about this sensational recreational reserve that we discovered.
Yes, well, we didn't discover it. It has been there, but we've stumbled upon it on our travels.
Okay, we didn't discover it. I mean, no, not actually, but I kind of feel as if we did because it's such a beautiful place and it's out in the middle of really nowhere, isn't it?
It is, yes.
It goes by the name of the Cranky Rock Recreational Reserve. Now, that's just east of Warrialda. Tell us a little bit about it. What do you think, Lynn?
Look, it's a great place to camp up. There are some powered sites there with some water that's tanked, but you can't really fill your tanks up.
Yeah.
There's toilets and showers, and there's a great walk down to the Cranky Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
It is.
Oh, I absolutely love the place.
And it's pet friendly.
It is.
Yes.
And they're pet friendly. They've got some horses roaming around down there.
They have peacocks.
They like to give your door a bit of a knock because they want you to give them an
something
apple or something.
Yes. Yeah.
And peacocks.
Yes, and usually there is a happy hour. So, you know, it's good. It's a great place to meet people and it's a great place to stop.
Absolutely. And the happy hour is fabulous because they've got a really big fire pit, don't they?
Yes, they do.
And we were lucky because the day we went there, the lady that is the caretaker there, she brought out some finger food.
Well, yes. I don't know if that happens all
the
time.
No, I don't think so. I think they must have realised they had some celebrities in the
Not too sure.
Not too sure about that one. Anyway, then we go to Ron Conlon.
Yes, the Chamber of the Black Hand at Lightning Ridge.
Lightning Ridge, what a sensational place that is.
That is a must see.
That is a must see in Lightning Ridge. We've done a couple of things in Lightning Ridge.
Yes.
We've spoken to a few people.
Oh, look, there's so much to do there.
But if you are going to go to Lightning Ridge and you miss the Chamber of the Black Hand, oh boy.
Make sure you go back.
You haven't done yourself any justice, that's for sure. And then from there, we shoot over to Bingara.
Yes, we do, and we meet John Wade from Wade Horses.
Now, isn't he a great bloke?
He is,
Got some fantastic horses there, folks. If you're interested in doing any sort of horse riding, they do like a two-hour rides, and they do overnight rides as well.
Yeah, I know.
Camping trips, fantastic bloke.
I'm not much of a horse person.
We did discuss that about you, and he said, look, don't worry, there's a horse for everybody's riding ability here at Wade Horses.
Okay.
Well, apart from these fabulous chats, Lynn, we've got this great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
All right, listeners, now I'd like to tell you a little bit about the Cranky Rock Recreation Reserve, okay? Cranky Rock, there's a turnoff. Now, it's 5 kilometres east of Warrialda on the Gwydir Highway. The 3 kilometre sealed road will take you all the way to Cranky Rock, where you will find a jumble of giant boulders heaped in the most fantastic positions, caused, of course, by a past volcanic upheaval. Absolutely brilliant place to visit, okay? Now, there's features include a suspension bridge, there's bird life, a wildlife sanctuary, and a viewing platform. Facilities also include a picnic area, a large shelter, free barbecues, there's public toilets and a children's playground. Now, there's a full-time caretaker there, which is, as I said earlier, before we started the program, they run the camping ground, okay? Now, you can get, there's powered and unpowered sites. And as I said before, there's also hot showers available and toilets available there as well, okay? Now, the walking trails are established to suit either an easy stroll or a more challenging walk for the adventurous hiker, okay? The name Cranky Rock was derived from an old legend which said that a cranky old Chinaman, I kid you not, jumped to his death from the highest point of the Balancing Rocks after being accused of some wrongdoing. Now, visitors can go fossicking along the creek, and that's a beautiful spot to visit as well. And there are also signs of Aboriginal life, which can be seen within the nature reserve amongst the many plant life. Well worth visiting Cranky Rock, folks, but do make sure that you book ahead, okay? Most important. Now, just to give you a little bit more about the fees there, two people for a powered site per night is $20, and you can get a weekly rate of $115. Pensioners per night, two people, are only $15. Pensioners per week are only $85, okay? Now, that's for two people. Additional persons, okay, 12 years and up, for a powered site is $5. If you're interested in camping and not requiring any power, well, then you can get two people for $15 or $75 a week. Pensioners are $12 or $55 a week, and that's for two people, okay, on an unpowered site. An additional people up to 12 years of age, again, on the unpowered sites is only $5. Now, if you want any information about the Cranky Rock, please contact the caretakers, okay? Now, get your pencil and paper out. Get it ready. I'm going to give you a couple of numbers. You can get them on 02-6729-1402, or you can contact the Warialda Information Centre on 02-6729-0046.
Search of something I'd never seen before. The kind of vision splendid Banjo saw. With a fresh roll in my camera and an eye for things you need, I left my mobile phone at home and went out back for a week. I stood beneath the tree, let my imagination run way back to the great Shearer's stride of 91. As it quietly contemplated all that tragic history, a tour bus full of kids from the city pulled up in front of me. And it's baseball shoes and old these shades. Here in the middle of the heartland, I feel I'm caught between Beverly Hills 90210 and the great Australian dream.
makes us who we are. That bus pulls up beside
kids get out. And it's baseball caps on backwards, like you wear them in L.A. Coca-Cola, Nike shoes, and old cliches. So I figured there's an answer somewhere in between Beverly Hills 90210 and the Great Australia.
There you go, folks. That is Graham Connors, The Great Australian Dream. Now, Graham Connors, of course, Australian country singer, songwriter and performer, and has released 17 studio albums and has received 14 Golden Guitar Awards, among other prestigious Australian country music awards. And wouldn't it be a great Australian dream to do what Ron Conlon's done, The Chamber of the Black Hand? And he's going to tell us all about it right now, folks. And I am now speaking with Ron Canlan from Lightning Ridge. He is the man responsible for the Chamber of the Black Hand. How are you going this afternoon, Ron?
Pretty good, thank you.
Matey, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us and being part of the program, first of all.
And, no problem, yeah.
And I want to find out a little bit about you before we get on to the Chamber of the Black Hand. Understand that, well, obviously your accent, you're English, so you weren't born in Australia. When did you come to Australia and when did you end up in Lightning Ridge?
We came to Australia in 1980, me and my late wife, and we moved to the Gold Coast where my wife's family were for a while, and they sort of... they sort of showed us the ropes around the place.
Right.
And then after we bought a little second-hand shop in Southport on the Gold Coast.
Yes.
And when we first came. And then a chap came in the shop one day and he mentioned Lightning Ridge, you know, and he said, because he got out there, you know, there's a couple of friends I can, you know, put you on to. Mm-hmm. And that's how we actually ended up at Lightning Ridge. We sort of went there and met the... a couple of the pals, he said, and we liked it. And then, you know, came back to the Southport and said, well, you know, we like, you know, it's just, it looks a nice sort of way of life, if you like, laid back and that. And so we decided to move. Mm-hmm. And that's what we ended up there, yeah.
So did you have any idea about the opal mining business that was sort of booming?
Not really. I mean, no. It was just a big adventure to both of us, you know. And we sort of went there and we bought a little shed on a claim there. That's how we first... I had a little camper van. I swung on camper when I went there.
Yep.
And we bought the claim for $2,000. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we sort of... from then on, we built... the camp as we stayed, lived in the little camper, and we built the camp. And over the few years, you know, I sort of got myself a mining claim proper and got a little bit of equipment, and that's how I started into opal mining.
Okay, so when you say the camp, are you referring to what is now the Chamber of the Hand?
Yeah.
Yes. So,
no. See, they refer to a camp, a Lightning Ridge. A camp is sort of a an abode which you either build on your claim.
Yes.
It can be from almost a mansion to a little humpy, really.
Yeah.
And there's some fantastic, what they call camps there, which are far better than your normal house in some townships.
Okay.
So, as I say, it's just a phrase. They say it's a camp, you know, and that's sort of, you know, what they call them.
Okay.
But, Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the Chamber of the Black Hand, that came after the camp. You set up a camp, yeah. You bought a claim, you looked for some opals, I guess, like everybody does when they come to Lightning Ridge and settle down.
Yeah.
And did you have any success with that, or was that or not? And that's when the Chamber of the Black Hand came about.
Well, actually, the Chamber of the Black Hand, it was the first claim I actually registered.
Okay.
The actual claim, which I developed later.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is I had that claim, the 3 mile claim, which is, as I say now, the Chamber. I worked that for about several years. And I got a few bob out of there, you know. And what happened is I used to meet a few people on the surface. I'd come up from the mine and meet a few people on the surface, and you know, they sort of would have a chat, and I always kept a little tin of opal in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inevitably they'd say, "Have you any opal to show us?" Like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, my little tin would come out, and they'd say, "Oh, they might buy opal, you know, for $20 and that, you know."
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gave me the idea of the tourist mine. You know, I thought, well, obviously, there's with tourism, there's obviously money to be made, because I wasn't making a lot as a miner, you know.
Yep.
So, and that's how the actual idea of the chambers came into mind.
Okay. So how long was the Chamber of the Black Hand, like, when did you first start carving all these magnificent carvings that you've got down there? How long ago was that?
Yeah, well, that would have been, 96. I don't know the exact date.
Okay.
But I mean, I never charged when I had it. It was just to come down, have a look around and buy an opal sort of thing.
Okay.
But then, when I met my friend Trevor,
yes,
who was the sort of entrepreneur, if you like, and he's the bloke who started the actual main business going, if you like.
Okay.
But I mean, how I started is, I thought, well, with a lot of visitors coming round,
mm-hmm,
what I'll do, I'll dig steps down to the level, which was 60 foot down, you see.
Right.
So I threw my hat on the deck and says, right, I'm going to start digging here. And that's what I did. I redesigned my hoist to so it could move dirt on a slant from, you know, as I went down the slant of the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd dig out like a little mole, go down, down, down. And when I got to the level at 60 foot,
mm-hmm,
then I started to, you know, go left, right and make drives and stuff.
Wow.
And that's how I started the mine. And then, at a later date, I just had to take people down into the main mine, which was, you know, just show them how the opal mining was went on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then I decided, well, I've always been a bit arty, so I noticed about 20 foot above the level, the actual clay level where the opal is,
yep,
20 foot above that was a sandstone level.
Right.
And that sandstone, to me, looked ideal for carving, and that's actually how I started excavating into that. So I went back up the stairs 20 foot and started carving, digging into the sandstone.
Right.
And what I did, I made the first room there and belled it out, so it was the size of a small room.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I thought, well, I'll put a cutting machine in here and show the people how to cut an opal and you know, like a proper little tourist thing.
Yes.
And then one day I decided I'd scratch a little animal on the wall, or, you know, a welcome sign and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how it was born. I thought, well, this is great fun, and it's you know, it's something I can do.
Right.
And that's how the actual thing, the chambers was born in some ways, yeah.
Okay. Now, you've got magnificent carvings down there. Have you done carving before, or was this your very first, you know, lead into it?
No, I haven't done sculpture before, but no. I thought I've always been pretty arty, you know.
Yeah.
And I started off in a pretty amateur way, you know. I'd look at the picture and then copy it onto the wall from a picture.
Right.
But then after a while, I thought, well, I need to do a little bit better than this. So
mm-hmm.
then I started to get tape measures out and squares, graphs and things, you know,
yes,
and make things to scale, properly to scale as they were.
Wow.
And that's how most of the carvings down the mine now are a little bit more, you know, from the first room, you
yes.
can see a definite difference in the quality of the carvings, if you like. And that's what I do now if I'm doing anything, yeah.
So how many rooms, for the benefit of the listeners, how many rooms do you actually have you know, at the Chamber of the Black Hand?
15 to 20
rooms.
Yeah, I can't think off the top of my head exactly how many, but, you know, we have a couple of TV rooms. Also have, down the bottom level, we have, you know, caverns down there, which we conduct a mining tour as well.
Yes.
But the top level, maybe 15 to 20 rooms of different carvings in them, and, you know, and that sort of, yeah.
Because you've got different themes in there, haven't you? I've been in there myself a couple of times, and I've looked at the walls, and I noticed you've got the Beatles, and you've got Superman flying on the ceiling, and then you've got this huge, magnificent Buddha. How long did it take you to do the Buddha? Because that was huge. I mean, we've got a photograph of you tonight standing in front of that, and it towers over both of us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I decided I'd do four Buddhas, actually, for that particular room.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started, I did the, you know, the Indian Buddha, then I did the Burmese Buddha, all the different types of Buddhas.
Yes.
And as I say, it took me about 6 months to excavate and carve, you know, carve them as I went round. I went round in a circle, did the Buddhas in the middle, and then went around them,
Okay.
And that, I say about 6 months roughly it would have taken me,
So what about the inspiration for the carvings? Like, are these just things of your own personal taste? Like, you're English, so I'm assuming you must have liked the Beatles maybe when you were a youngster. But the Buddha, where does this come from? Was it just you thought this?
Well, as I say, it was just themes. Yeah, it was just themes. And I mean, it's not only things I like. I thought, well, what would other people like?
Okay.
You know, and as I say, that's where these ideas came from.
Uh-huh.
As I say, it's... Well, I mean, I'm not a religious man.
No, fair enough, fair enough. But there obviously other
just
people
carvings
are.
Carvings and things, and that's where they came from because they're so nice, you know, beautiful. But that's the reason I did them.
And then I guess over time, as it grew and grew and grew, and your friend Trevor. He obviously saw an opportunity for this to become quite a tourist attraction.
Because exactly, that's
it,
right.
It is a big tourist attraction here in Lightning Ridge, and
I'll give Trevor a pat on the back because he's done a wonderful job. I mean, you know, a lot of the safety stuff, you know, down the mine and stuff like that, and. As I say, he's a businessman. He's what he was doing, Incidentally, we've got two new partners now.
Okay.
Trevor's left. Trevor's left, and I have two new partners,
Okay. And I understand also that you're no longer in Lightning Ridge yourself. You come to Lightning Ridge a few times a year and check the carvings, make sure everything's, you know, not looking worn, and if you need to touch things up and so on and so forth. So you're now living in a different area to the Ridge. And then you've got other people that are now managing it for you.
That's correct. Yeah, I've got my two friends, Scott and Gary. They're the actual owners of the mine, of the business down the mine now.
Okay.
I own the mine.
Yes.
But they own the business. You know, the tourism and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, also they do a wonderful job at the same as well. And I go there now when I, you know, roughly. Well, whenever I can, actually, you know, because I like to go down and just check that things are ship shape, and if anything wants touching up, I can do it, or if anything wants mend, sometimes you might get a nose, with it being sandstone, it's fairly soft.
Yes.
So a nose might drop off and stuff, you know, and I can go down there and rebuild it and stuff like that.
Michael Jackson, for example.
Exactly.
So how long have you been living in the Ridge? Because you've come from the Gold Coast or Southport to move to Lightning Ridge. That's a big move within itself. Different, totally different climate, temperature and totally different environment. How long were you living in the Ridge? Oh, well, listeners, the answers to that question and more on the Chamber of the Black Hand Mine and Ron Conlon will be answered straight after this song, okay? It's called Blue Sky Mine and it was a big hit for Midnight Oil.
We'll be right back. gift is no more than a token. We'll strike the flint upon the stone and tell me why. If I yell out at night, there's a reply of blue silence. The screen is no comfort, I can't speak my sentence. They blew the lights at heaven's gate, and I don't know why. But if I work all day on the blue sky mine, they're crossing their fingers, they pay the truth makers. The balance sheet is breaking up the sky. So I'm caught at the junction, still waiting for medicine. The sweat of my brow keeps on feeding the engine. Hope the crumbs in my pocket can keep me for another night. And if the blue sky mining company won't come to my rescue, if the sugar refining company won't save me, who's gonna save me? Who's gonna save me? Who's gonna save me? But if I work all day on the blue sky mine,
there'll be food on the table tonight.
And if I walk up and down,
I had 36 tremendous years.
Yes.
Enjoyed every minute of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Got a bit hot now and again, but you sort of get used to it, and and that, you know. But I say the lifestyle's really great, and I had the local newspaper there for 10 years, me and my late wife.
Okay.
We produced the Lightning Flash newspaper for a while.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you never had a house underground, because I know, and for the benefit of the listeners, like, it could be 40 degrees plus up on the surface, but you walk down, or you go down, because you now have a lift which takes you down into the mine, and it's very cool and very, very, very nice to be underground, actually. Did you ever have a house underground, or no?
No, Lionheads tends to be, housed above the ground, simply because it does get a bit damp on the level, the actual opal level.
Yes.
It does get a bit damp, so you'd end up with bronchitis or something, if you lived underground there. Yeah.
Not good for your health. Yeah. So how long have you been away from Lightning Ridge?
2 years now. Yeah, we came here in, We just arrived here when the big bushfires were in Batlow.
In Batlow, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we timed it perfectly, because we got evacuated 3 days after we got here. So
okay.
That was good timing.
So do you miss the place? You've been away from there. You lived there for 39 years. So you must hold a lot of magnificent fond memories.
I do miss it. I miss the mining. I never had the big machinery.
No,
I was always sort of what we call a gouger, if you like.
Yep.
And I'd get my jackhammer and my little hoist and sort of a truck, and that's you know, and I've been looking for opal. I didn't process it like, you know, the bigger miners do.
Yes.
Which I regret now because I've probably missed a lot of opal in my time. But I thoroughly enjoyed what I did and yep. what I found, you know, which yes. is not a lot.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, but as I say, I do miss the mining there. Yeah.
Right. Although you didn't find a lot, I think you're going to be leaving an incredible legacy for so many people that are going to have the opportunity of going to Lightning Ridge and seeing your magnificent work. So what you didn't make up for in opal, I think you've made up for tenfold by doing what you've done. Because it's a magnificent, I was going to say gallery, but it's not a gallery. It's like you said, 15 to 20 rooms of magnificent carvings that you just did all by yourself, really. How did you carve out some of the bigger? Did you use machinery to do any of the carving, or was it all done by hand?
Yeah. The only machinery I used was a jackhammer and an automatic hoist. Mm-hmm. And your wheelbarrow and the chuck on the top, of course, yeah.
Okay.
But then, yeah, when we first started, Trevor insisted on digging the showroom, which is quite a big showroom.
Yes.
He insisted on digging that with a digger and a blower, a big suction machine, mm-hmm. because he wanted to get started straight, you know, immediately when we sort of first started, made an agreement to work together.
Yes.
Yeah, so... That's the only part which was done by machinery. Mm-hmm. The rest of it, I would have took hundreds of tons and tons and tons of dirt out of there. But you know, it's amazing how, you know, one wheelbarrow, two wheelbarrows, and then it just goes on to 10,000 wheelbarrows, and that's the way it goes.
Goodness gracious! And that area you're talking about—that's where you've got your main shop, where you sell the opals.
That's
and
right.
That's where your
exactly,
tool.
Yeah.
That's where your tool begins, and then you hop in, yes, into the
right.
elevator, and it takes you down to the next levels.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
fantastic.
From the top level, we have an incline where you can actually walk down to the bottom level,
mm-hmm.
and then you can. You know, I see we've got tremendous guides there, and we've got a wonderful staff. Mm-hmm. They're all Lightning Ridge people who know exactly what they're talking about, and the guides are all ex-miners also who know what they're talking about. So they give a very interesting tour all round, really.
Yep.
So we're very, very lucky to have them, you know.
Fantastic. So have you got any sort of desires to, when you do go back to visit, because you do say you go back once or twice a year, not just to do maintenance, but to actually continue carving more carvings, making more carvings?
If I could find... Yeah, what happened in the end, I tried excavating different places, but it's not the sandstone's not all suitable in a lot of places.
Okay.
So I've been where I've used all the good sandstone up.
Yep.
So if at some later stage, you know, Gary and Scott decide that they're going to dig a bit more on the top level there where the sandstone is and can find a bit of better sandstone, then I'm sure if I'm so capable, I would love to indulge in something else, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Given the time, of course, yeah.
Yes. Now, off the top of your head, how many carvings do you have? Because you said 15 to 20 rooms. Some of the carvings are really tiny, and some of them are huge. I mean, just to give the listeners an idea of what they can expect to see, something as small as the hand, like your hand, for example, but then something as big as a Buddha that towers over the top of us. So, I mean, there's how many? How many do you think?
There have to be probably 400, probably 300 or 400 carvings, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah, when you count every little thing, you know, in there.
No. Yeah. But just to give my listeners an opportunity, like the smallest carving you've got in there would be something probably the size of your hand. I do remember seeing one in there that I chuckled over. You had Rolf Harris carved in there, and you had him behind bars.
there's actually a mouse there, so they do go from mice to elephants, actually.
Yes, yeah, absolutely fantastic. Look, it's been wonderful to chat with you, Ron. I mean, I've been there a couple of times. I've met you once, and I love Lightning Ridge myself. What is it about Lightning Ridge? What is the attraction for you? Because I've been there a few times, and whenever I'm out that way, I always think I've got to go back and see Lightning Ridge. What was it for you that you know, inspired you to stay there for nearly 40 years?
Well, it's like I say, it's a sort of a laid-back way of life.
Yes.
And, I mean, there's a lot more rules and regulations now than there were in 30-odd years ago.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I mean, everything was, you know, a fraction of the price it is now, like when it comes to mining and mine costs and all that sort of stuff. But it was, when we first came, you know, it was inexpensive to get a claim.
Yep.
Because you didn't have to go through lots of paperwork to build your own little house on it, if you like.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, and it's sort of somewhere, you know, we ended up with our own house, which we built ourselves and that.
Uh-huh.
And where else in Australia can you go and do this,
yes,
you know, without rules, regulations and stuff like that? I mean, there is, of course, there's rules and regulations at Lightning Ridge, more, yep, so now than there were.
Yeah.
But 30-odd years ago, it was a little less, you know, sort of intrusive with, yep, with the rules, like.
Yep, so but, very, very
say, but the way of life, you know, you'd going to have a barbecue with friends and, mm-hmm, the main bowling club in the centre there, that was a tremendous hub for, you know, every weekend they'd have a do on there, and they, yep, still do with it. And it's a tremendous sort of place for people to go in Lightning Ridge anyway,
yeah,
you know, in the middle of town. But as I say, it's just that gets through to you, I think, you know, you sort of, it's just a way of life, and the ridge is the ridge, if you like. It's,
yeah,
definitely different. And, you know, where else do you go around the fields and people living in their own houses they've built or, you know, bought camps and, you know, they mine there. And as I say, it's just different, that's all. Yeah.
So it's a definite way of life. You either cut out for it or you're not cut out for it, and obviously
that's,
you were.
Exactly right, yeah. I mean, some of the summers are horrendous. I mean, you get 40-odd degrees in summers and that, you know. And,
yep.
I mean, but you we also have a saying in the Marines that anybody can be uncomfortable.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, we made our own little swimming pool to keep cool in, and there's always a way, you know what I mean.
Where there's a will, there's a way, indeed.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. Yeah. Ron, I'm going to leave you there. Yeah. It's been magnificent talking to you, and I just hope that once the situation with COVID settles down and people start coming through your town or what, yeah, used to be your town, that they all make an effort to go and have a look at the Chamber of the Black Hand, because it's magnificent, and you'd have to be so proud of what you've created there. And I know it's going to be there for generations to come, and people are going to be looking at it and talking about it.
Yeah.
And, my friend, I take my hat off to you. I don't know how you had the inspiration to do what you've done, but it certainly would have been a difficult feat, as you said, with a wheelbarrow and a few other tools. But where there's a will, there's a way, and you must have had one, yeah, heck of a will. That's all I can say.
Yeah, when you're younger, you can do these things. But thanks anyway. I appreciate that.
So. That's really good. Thanks, Ron, for taking the time to chat with me. Matey, before I let you go, I always play a song at the end of it, and it's always Australian. Now, do you have a favourite Australian singer or a favourite Australian band, something you might like to have listened to when you were down in the mine carving, and those carvings? Yeah,
I think Old Fart and Caravan Fart. That was, as I say, John Williamson is a tremendous artist, and
yes,
that's one of my favourites of his, Old Farts and Caravan Farts.
Fantastic. Well, look, I know you're a tad over 70, but I would definitely not call a man with your strength and stamina an old fart and in a caravan in a caravan park. But if that's the song you want to hear, Ron, it is my pleasure to put it on for you.
Okay, mate. But I am an old fart now anyway.
Okay.
See you later, mate.
Thank you so much for your time. That is Ron Conlon, folks. He is the creator of the Chambers of the Black Hand Mine. And anybody travelling through Lightning Ridge really has to make sure they stop and see that. It's a number one attraction within Lightning Ridge. Thank you so much again, Ron.
Thank you, Dan. See you.
All right, mate. Stick around, listeners. We're going to be putting up Old Farts in Caravan Parks. Johnny Williamson for Ron. And we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after that.
Thank you. Well, when we were in the Kimberley, we actually toured the show through first of all. And I made sure everybody in the audience knew I was going to come back through with a camper van. So I got all sorts of invites to go out to stations and up rivers fishing for barramundi. Just fantastic. And, of course, we did stay in a lot of caravan parks as well. This is all the way between Broome and Darwin. And I hadn't, you know, I'd forgotten all about Caravan Parks. It's fabulous. I met all these wonderful old people. And I could feel a song coming on straight away. And I've called it Old Farts in Caravan Parks. Oh, happy travellers are we, around Australia in a caravan. The kids are gone, we have no plan. You navigate, I'm your engine man. Yes, happy campers are we. And king of the road are we. Up a mountain road we wind, with a mile of traffic stuck behind. Too friendly a folk you wouldn't find. Oh, cheery old chooks away. We've hit the road and sold a home, like a pair of drovers round we roam. No more winter and no more foam. We're wild and fancy free. And a pair of toilers are we. We'll pick fruit or prune a tree. Any old job doesn't worry me. It'll cover our fuel and the camping fee. Ah, frugal old farts, oi. And the dear old chooker, you, in your terry-toweling dressing gown. The one you bought in the country town. Yours is pink and mine is brown. Threadbare old farts, oi. Yes, I've hit the road and sold a home, like a pair of drovers round we roam. No more winter and no more foam. We're wild and fancy free. Oh, geez, we'll have to pull up again soon, don't we? And a tidy little unit away. Everything has a place to be. A jar of coffee and a tin of tea. A life for two, but not for three. Oh, sexy old tarts away. And we always camp just near the loo, cause I have to go at midnight too. And dribble, 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 dribble's all I do. Oh, over the hill are we. Oh, happy campers are we. Around Australia in a caravan. The kids are gone, we have no plan. You navigate, I'm your engine man. Yes, happy campers are we. Go around. Go around. And the same to you too, sonny.
Oh, there you go, folks. That was Johnny Williamson, Old Farts in Caravan Park. So I'm going to play you a song now by Lee Kernaghan, which is going to wind us into our final guest for the program this afternoon, Mr. John Wade from Bingara Horses. Now, he's a bit of a boy from the bush. John will be up straight after this, folks. Ha!
Been shearing sheep. We've been mustering stock. We've been culling out roots. We've been spraying the crops. We've been droving cattle up an old stock route. Now it's Saturday night. We pile in the ute. We're the boys from the bush and we're back in town. Well, the dog's in the back and the foot goes down. We're life members of the Outback Club. We're the boys from the bush coming from the scrub. We've been out in the heat. We've been loading the trucks. We've been fixing fences. We've been choking on dust. We curse the rain. We curse the drought. Now it's Saturday night. Shout. We're the boys from the bush and we're back in town. We get high when the sun goes down.
members of the Outback Club.
Well, the boys on the bush come in from the scrub.
We're in Bingara at Wade Horses Bingara with the owner of the establishment, John Wade. How are you this morning, John?
I'm very well, thank you.
Fantastic, mate. It's a beautiful day here in Bingara. Thanks for taking some time out of your busy day to talk to us.
Happy to.
Fantastic, mate. Tell us about your business now. How long have you had Bingara Horses?
Oh, we started operating in 91.
Okay.
Which was a fluke because we got a backpacker bus come through and it was only they needed an activity and we were it.
Fantastic stuff.
We had horses, but we ended up doing a job for those people once they come through.
Absolutely.
And we just kept going from there.
Brilliant. Now, how many horses do you have?
Oh, we'd have 80 now.
80 horses. Fantastic stuff. And obviously all levels of horses, from beginners to real...
Oh, there's no really performance horses in them, but we've got those ones that'll, you know, that are just a nice horse that'll roll along for that better rider and not give them any grief.
Okay.
Can't have horses that are a little bit above anybody.
Okay, fantastic.
So we sort of, you never know who's coming, you see.
Okay.
But there's some nice horses there that are good quality horses.
And I understand you breed horses, is that correct?
Yeah, we've been breeding them all the way through.
Okay. So how many have you bred? How many have actually been born here?
Oh.
That you've bred yourself?
All of them.
Really?
Yeah.
So how many did you start out with?
Well, you always start with one.
Yeah, but I mean, you said you had a bus of backpackers come through.
Oh, yeah, we would have had 10 to 20 horses here
to
start with.
And you got now 80.
No, we probably would have had 12, I suppose, when the backpacker buses. Then we bought horses, then we've been breeding them from since then.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
If I do buy a horse, I'll buy a standard bred, because that's the best horse I can breed a horse from.
Okay.
And they can do this job without giving me any grief.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm very lucky to be able to put my hands on quality standard breds.
That's great stuff. So what about the ability of your riders? Now, for example, what's the youngest rider you've had here?
Oh, four-year-old up the river.
Four-year-old?
Yes.
Okay.
But, you know, that would be led out and led back.
Okay.
So that they're safe.
Morning.
Oh,
morning.
Here come some of the girls. There's some of your staff. Hello, ladies.
Hello. How are you going?
Good, thank you. Now, what about the oldest rider you've ever had?
Oh,
unassisted.
We've had like Mother's Day, you might get the grandmother, the daughter and the granddaughter.
Okay.
78, 80.
78 or 80. There's aim for you yet, Lenny.
Yes,
yeah, they're sprightly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they were good girls.
They're good girls?
Oh, Jesus.
Now, what about if you've never ridden a horse in your
life?
Makes no difference. Tell us how you deal with a person who's never been on a horse before in their
life. Well, we'll just go through our groups and we'll pick out our non-riders first, and then we put them on our extra quiet horses, and the people are matched up to the horses for their riding ability, and then we just go from there.
Okay.
But we'll also, our staff will go along and put a lead rope on anybody that's not feeling so confident, and they'll ride along beside them.
Okay.
And, you know, just teach them a few things. Quickest way to learn to ride.
Absolutely. So how long do you think they'd need that lead rope before they'd be confident enough to...
Oh, that depends on the person. Some people will go all the way out and all the way back. They're just never going to... They might have had a fright years ago, or they're just not that stable.
Okay.
It depends on the person.
Yeah, that sounds
good. Usually we get around everybody and we go... And then the ones that don't want to be left off, we'll just lead them home.
Sounds a bit like you, Lenny.
Yes, it does.
She'd be fine.
Lynn's been on a horse a couple of times, and yeah, I think we should come down here one day. Lynn, this place and John, they sound like he's definitely got the ability to turn you into a rider.
Maybe.
Now, what sort of rides do you do? Is it an hour's ride? What are the different?
Well, the one we're doing today is a 4-hour ride up to what we call Bora Creek.
Right.
It's for like two up, two back. And we'll have lunch up there, then return.
Okay.
But run of the mill, we just do two hours up the river.
Okay.
And they either go for a swim there where we pull up halfway, or they'll light a fire and stand around a fire. Depends on what they want to do.
Brilliant.
Kids
stuff.
Love the fire and the water.
Absolutely. And you do longer rides too, I understand.
Oh, yes. Well, I've got a property 22K out, so we can ride from the farm back along the river to Binga or vice versa.
Okay.
Great for the young horses that need a ride.
Need for a ride. Absolutely brilliant. And while you're on the ride now, is obviously, you would separate your group, because there's some people, like I can ride, and Lynn can't, for example. So would you break us up into groups and let us do our thing?
If you've got some quality riders or some that want to go a bit quicker, we'll just split those off with one of the staff, and I'll stay with the learners, and I'll send the staff to the better riders, and they'll go for a bit of a race about up there through the bush.
A race about.
We've got some really good tracks up there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, beautiful. Absolutely beautiful up the river.
Okay.
It is, really.
So we don't get to see any Flintstones flying as we go charging down the side of the mountain.
No. I won't knock those ponies around. We're on our good tracks.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
And so you don't do any overnight rides or campouts? Or?
Every now and then we will. Okay. It just depends on whether it's hot or cold, or whether somebody wants to go. If somebody wants to do something, we'll do it.
Fantastic.
We're pretty flexible.
Very flexible. So
it's all fun.
I've got to tell you, and you did say that when you actually go out on a ride, you got a leader, and then you got somebody at the back, and there's usually about three.
Oh no, probably more. But we've got staff at the front, the back, and in the middle, and they're floating around looking for somebody that might have their reins wrong, stirrups wrong.
Okay.
Anything that needs adjusting.
Okay.
They're there to, you know, just to keep everything right.
Fantastic.
So, you know, they're constantly riding around just to see if everything's okay.
Okay. So what sort of riders do you get? Is it mainly the local people? Do you get a lot of tourists come through here going on
rides?
Our
business has changed. We were dealing with backpacker buses.
Okay.
But they're not about anymore. But we're just getting the families that are travelling inland. They're everywhere now.
Absolutely.
And our business has changed a lot because of that.
Yeah.
So mum and dad and the kids, and or grandmother and the kids, and, you know, it's a good job.
Yep.
I love this job, mate.
You love this job, I can tell. I can tell by that smile on your face. So what's the largest group you've ever taken?
Well, people will think I'm telling lies, but we took 72 horses out one day and 73 the next, back when the backpacker buses were really busy.
Wow.
We had a heap of stopovers. We had a 50-seater bus in and a 20-seater bus, so we pulled 72, 73 horses out of that day. Or those 2 days.
That's incredible. I can't imagine. 73 on a ride.
But oh boy, were they great horses. Because they work 5-6 days a week. And they were good old educated horses. Jeez, they were beauties.
Yeah.
They were a great team.
Yeah.
Great team horse.
So what's the life expectancy of a horse in a place like this?
Do this job here.
Yeah.
26 or 7. They start to trip over after that.
Okay.
And then, you know, their ability to get up after tripping mightn't be that great, so we don't use them. We just return, let them go out on the farm, or we give them away.
And what would be the youngest horse that is suitable to ride?
We don't use them until they're 4 or 5 year old.
Okay. So 4 or 5 years, you just got to feed and fatten them up.
Oh, well, they might be ridden out the farm where I live out on the farm, so we'd ride them out there. And then the girls, like this young lady here, they'll ride them. But if they're not a good horse, you won't get a job.
No.
We've got a nice little coloured filly down the back there now that's just getting, she's had one ride outside and she'll go today.
Okay. So what do you mean by not a good horse?
Anything that wants to hurt somebody.
Oh, okay.
Or wants to go too fast, or shakes its head, or, you know, agitated.
Okay.
He's got to be a good, quiet, safe, good walking horse.
Absolutely.
You know, good temperament.
Absolutely. Because it's obviously safety's paramount to everything.
Oh, safety's everything.
Yeah.
Most importantly, safety.
Absolutely. And your years with working with horses, breeding horses, you obviously know what's suitable.
What we breed here is we cross the standard bred mares with heavy feathery leg stallions and slows them up, and They're a great horse for this job because they're thick-skinned and very good doers.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
They do a good job, these horses.
And how many rides are you doing today? Because it's a beautiful day.
We're only doing
day.
One big one today.
Just one big one? And how long is that?
We'll be 4 hours.
4 hours today.
Yeah, we'll leave about 10:30 and then we'll be back about 2:30, 3 o'clock.
Fantastic stuff.
But it's beautiful up the river there now.
Absolutely brilliant stuff. All right, John, well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Mate, it's been really wonderful to meet you and have a look at these fantastic horses you've got here. For anybody interested, listeners, in doing a horse ride in Bingara, definitely you've got to check out Wade Horses, okay? Now, I'm going to play you a song, John. It's got to be Aussie.
Right, Omar.
Who's your favourite?
Oh, give me a bit of Jimmy Barnes, mate.
Jimmy Barnes. Mate, you look like a working class man. You're wearing your hat, you've got your boots on, your dryer bone coat. How about we do working class man for you? How does
mate,
that sound?
Mate, that sounds lovely.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, John.
Good on you, buddy.
Good on you, mate. Stick Thank around, you. Listeners, for more of Roman Oz straight after Jimmy Barnes's Working Class Man.
Working hard to make a living, bringing shelter from the rain. A father's son left to carry on blue denim in his veins. Whoa, he's a working class man.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.